Good morning, Teachers on Fire. Welcome to another edition of the Teachers on Fire podcast. I'm here in studio today with Jason Kennedy. Very excited to get to know him and connect with him in real time. So Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tim.
Jason is a 23-year veteran educator with experience in classrooms from elementary through college. He has served as an instructional coach, school building administrator, and a district administrator. His passion lies in collaborating with others in designing highest quality learning for all learners. You can follow Jason on X at Let's Quit Teaching. Jason, thank you for coming on the show today. Are you ready to light it up?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Why don't you start by telling us a little bit more about your current context in education? What does that look like for you?
My current role is in a district director role as a director of curriculum and professional learning. And so, you know, basically my whole 10-hour day revolves around learning and how we can improve it for our learners in the building, as well as how we can support staff in the building, because they are the ones that are leading the learning for our kids. And so, you know, that's my whole world every day.
Awesome. Well, let's get into story time, shall we? Share a story of adversity, Jason, that you've faced in your teaching or education career, and describe how you overcame it.
I remember I had switched school systems and came into a high school, and I was handed probably about 8 5-inch, you know, monster binders, and was told, this is what we do as far as a curriculum. And it just rubbed me the wrong way. I mean, in my mind, our curriculum is our standards that, you know, for example, state of Georgia provides us Georgia Standards of Excellence. That is our curriculum. Everything else is a resource, you know, that I pull in. And so I'm not a big fan of anything that takes away autonomy and creativity of teachers to get learning across the students. You know, this 8 5-inch binders contained, you know, everything scripted, all sorts of things. And it's just, I had a hard time that year, you know, winning over my peers and thinking, you know, how some of this stuff is great and, you know, it's a resource, but really our job is to teach, you know, the standards and make learning the priority. And how we get that across, you know, we come together and collaborate and share resources and share strategies and pull from wherever we can. And so it turned out we sat there and just, you know, hashed it out and basically wrote a whole new plan, you know, that first year that I arrived at that high school. So it turned out all right.
That is great to hear. And I love when you can take something that is very perhaps outdated or scripted and bring some new fire to it and bring it alive. Well, share about your writing, Jason, because you are so active on letsquitteaching.com. You're active on medium.com. You've written a book, and let me make sure to get that title. Let's Stop Teaching and Start Designing Learning, A Practical Guide. So let's talk about your writing. How has your writing affected or impacted your professional learning journey?
I cannot remember where I heard this quote from, a past professor probably, but you know, he had, it was a writing class, and the quote was, I never know what I knew until I read what I wrote. And so writing for me, you know, on my own website, on Medium, even this book, just helps, you know, get ideas churning and going, and just has it makes you think. You know, writing is just such a complex thing, and it just pulls all these connections you have. And, you know, my love of learning and how we can make learning happen in the classroom is what drives everything that I write about. Because for so long, and I've said this before, my personal journey into education as an undergraduate, you know, I was just fed content, you know, secondary English major, education major, and just all my classes were content. I might have had 2 education classes, ed psych, and, you know, you learn your Piaget, your Bloom, your Maslow and things like that. But then
Dewey.
Dewey. And, but then I might've had a class that taught us about lesson plans. But other than that, you know, I get thrown into a classroom and no one ever told me, hey, this is how you make learning happen. And so basically when I write, I'm thinking about things that I wish my 20-year-old self would have known, 23 years ago, when I first walked into a classroom, because it's like, I could have done so much more, you know, with my kids in front of me in that classroom, if I would have just known that the job has always been about learning and how I can make that happen, instead of just going in there and teaching like we have been, you know, the last 200 years.
Well, I want to dig in a little deeper, drill in a little deeper, perhaps, on this idea of quitting teaching and designing learning instead. I'm sure you get a lot of reactions around this idea of quitting teaching. Can you say more about what that means and the core values that it speaks to?
Right. And when I came up with this idea, you know, let's quit teaching, it was pre-pandemic. And so after the pandemic, and we had the mass exodus of teachers, you know, the quitting teaching part might have got lost in translation, which is why the book title changed just a little bit. But I don't want us to quit the teaching profession. That's not it at all. I love what I do. I love talking with other educators and working with them. The quitting teaching, though, is we've got to quit what we have been doing, the way we have been doing it for the last, like I said, 200 years. When I entered the classroom, really, if I boil it down to the basics, all I did was I did the same thing that was done to me, except I tried to, you know, make it my own, make it engaging, you know, whatever else. But in all practical purposes, I taught the way I was taught, and most of us do. And so the focus about let's quit teaching, start designing learning is centers around that quote from, you know, Fisher, Fry, and Hattie: every student deserves a great teacher, not by chance, but by design. And my word for this last, or ever since I published the book, has been the word intentional. You know, teaching, I can go in there and teach content and hope learning happens. But if I design learning intentionally, making the choices that, okay, if I, you know, design X for Y to happen in my room, that's being intentional. I want this as a result, so I'm going to put this into place. Not necessarily like teaching has been, well, I'm going to go in and do some kind of opener and have some instruction and give them some content and they're going to produce something and then we'll summarize it at the end. That's all part of it. But again, designing learning is about being intentional and knowing what works and what works for learning. Since we have all this new information around the science of learning, you know, the last 20 years, we just got to put it to use.
I love that you approach these topics not from just, you're not just blasting out random opinions. You're very evidence-based. You're very thoughtful. You're reflective, and you're bringing some substance to the conversation. So that's something I've come to appreciate about you a lot. You also write about the importance of focusing our efforts on tier one. And I think most educators across North America by this time are pretty familiar with the three tiers. We see the three tiers show up in different models, as you know. Why is your focus on tier one such a deep conviction for you?
I believe because the stress and the attention and the money and all the other things surrounding tier two and tier three, especially, you know, post-pandemic with the missed learning that has happened. You know, we want to catch kids up and we want to get them back where they need to be. You know, we tend to drive improvement through tiers two and three. We think, oh, the only way to bring up low scores and low achievement and low growth and everything else is through the tiers two and three. My philosophy is everything hinges on tier one. If you have a well-designed tier one that is just designed for learning, first of all, you won't have the need and the numbers in tiers two and three. You know, that's what, you know, post-pandemic, everyone's kind of freaking out in schools. We got so many kids needing tier services, and the problem can be solved by going back to tier one and saying, is this tier one about a well-designed learning for all learners? You know, not, doesn't matter the, you know, the address, the nervous system, the last name, the income, whatever kid comes to us, they get a tier one that is top notch. And And some things we kind of reserve for tier two and three, as far as interventions and scaffolds and everything, that should be a part of our tier one. And I'll even flip it on the other side. You know, some of those tier two and tier three practices that we give to gifted learners, you know, things that we hold just for those gifted learners that have been identified, that should be put in our tier one. Mm. You know, what works for learning for all. And that's where we build a tier one that, you know, has all the qualities designed into it because we know that that works. And you take all the stress off of two and three, and what you will see is you'll have higher achievement, you'll have higher growth, you will have lower misbehaviors if you design learning to happen.
So good. I think about that a lot, and something I hear around my context and other schools I've been at as well, for that matter, is that when we think about supporting learners, let's say learners who are on an individualized education plan, we think about these additional supports, and you're absolutely right. A lot of those supports are just best practice. Exactly. They're simply best practice. And the more we can add those supports, and we hear this through UDL and other similar philosophies in our schools right now, but the more we can focus our efforts on giving every, as you put it, every single student that comes in through our door, those quality on-ramps for learning, the more problems we're going to solve up above, right, in the other tiers as well. And you put that so much better. Why am I trying to paraphrase? But I just think it's a really important idea. It's a really profound idea. One small example that I think about often is closed captions. So when teachers play videos in their classrooms, it drives me crazy sometimes that we're not putting captions on the video, because it's a simple click. YouTube, if we're using YouTube, YouTube always has captions, and it's easy to turn on. And you might have one in your mind as a teacher, you might be thinking, oh, I just have one or two students in the classroom who could benefit from that. But I'll tell you what, like probably I'm going to say like 80, 90% of your classroom could benefit from having captions on the screen simply as a backup. Or you watch some kids, it increases their engagement. Now they're reading the words, and they're building all kinds of other skills. Their comprehension is going up. It's such an easy switch to make. Do you know what I mean? Like, does that example make sense?
Sure, absolutely. And I mean, you talk about things like that. It reminds me of, you know, well, we're inundated with ed tech now because AI and everything else. But even back, you know, just say in the last 10 years with ed tech rolling out, and everyone wanted to pick up every new tool there was, and it really wasn't about learning. It was about, I learned this new tech thing, I'm going to try it out in the classroom. Well, it's got to go back to intent, right? Intent. If I want learning to happen, and if I want this to happen, I can use this too. Tech's the tool to get there. So I have to choose the tech as a tool to get the specific outcome that I want. It's just like your captioning. And so, you know, take that mindset and apply it to everything we do in the room, whether it's scaffolding or, you know, with the captioning, you're just turning more of the learning and responsibility of it back over to the kids. And that's whose learning it is anyway. You know, too often we feel like the adults in the room, we're the ones that should be doing all the talking, questioning and everything else. When in reality, that's all the heavy lifting and learning that we need to turn back over to the kids. And it can be so easily done if we just designed for it ahead of time.
Jason, as you look around education, what else is setting you on fire today? I know you've got a lot of passions going on.
You know, just the science of reading and all the changes that we're seeing, you know, across the United States and worldwide with that has just kind of translated back over to, okay, so we recognize that there's a science behind reading and how the brain works to read. What I like to see is, okay, let's move over a little bit more to, is, you know, what does science say about learning? Mm. You know, I'm really into cognitive psychology and how we learn and what it requires to learn. And that's what kind of drives some of the conversations that I have is, okay, is this really about learning, or is this really about just compliant work? You know, we just have to get into the mindset of, you know, and a lot of our old traditional teaching methods were a lot of content and compliance based practices.
Right.
And we got to get into, okay, well, was that really about learning? Did we, you know, we got to have kids who, you know, leave school, who know stuff and know content, but we also had to have graduates from school that can learn. You know, that's why a lot of our kids who go to, you know, on to college or, you know, post work, it's, they struggle because they're having to learn for the first time and learn how to learn.
Right.
It's not just, I'm sitting in my desk, you know, and doing my work. I take, you know, two classes a day at college, and then I got to figure out what to do in between to help get ready for whatever assessment I have. So it's a different world for, you know, when you're a freshman in college, when you have to teach yourself how to learn. And that's some of the things that we can be doing so easily. I've seen it done with 5-year-olds and 15-year-olds, just, you know, turning learning back over to them, you know, with us facilitating in a well-designed, you know, system. And it kind of, I illustrate it like this. We can have students come to the room, and we have learners come to the room. You know, students come to the room. Typically they are delivered content. They sit quietly. They are compliant. They do their work. They turn it in. They receive a grade, do it all again the next day. If I want a learner come to the room, I want learners who come, who explore content and self-assess and reflect and revise their work and do all that stuff, make mistakes and talk about those mistakes and do all that stuff. And so really who shows up the room is about me. It's about what I do before they walk into the room. Mm-hmm. I can plan to have students come to the room. I can have a slideshow ready and have a worksheet and notes ready to take, and they will complete a task and I'll grade it and they'll walk out the door. Or I can have learners come to the room and I can have some different things designed for them. And so who shows up to the room is all on my prep work before they get there.
If you had asked me at the dawn of my career, if you'd walked into my classroom and said, well, what are your students doing? I might have said something like, oh, they're making a collage. They're clipping National Geographic magazines. We're building a collage about culture and civilization, or
right,
they're making posters, or they're doing this work or that work or that, this task or that. And the kid, and this is why I'm such a fan of learning targets, because they're not just helpful for students, they're helpful for teachers, right? Because they focus our minds and our attention on what are students actually learning, which is so different than what students are doing. What's the work they're doing? Well, who cares in a way what work exactly they're doing? We're interested in the learning. And I wish I had thought of it. I'm just remembering now, you put out such a great post about learning targets a while ago. I was applauding over here, but that's one of the reasons why I'm such a fan, is that it's got to orient, again, not just students, but the teacher as well. Jason, what is one way that you are looking to grow professionally this year? Have you got a certain goal in mind?
You know, with the publication of this book, and it came out in May, you know, I've been working with some schools and some districts in different states. You know, I want to continue that work with those who are interested. I've even had a couple Canadian contacts, which has been nice. Just, you know, I'm getting messages and emails from teachers and district leaders, and I just love having those conversations and just getting some ideas going. Because in reality, you know, I don't have all the answers, and I cannot turn around and give you anything boxed. Because the beauty of education is, you know, we take on the design of our process on our own, because the one advantage we have above anybody else is we know the kids in the room. Mm. You know, we cannot dismiss the relationship piece when it comes to learning. There's so much impact and learning impact embedded in, you know, the relationship piece. And so that's my whole philosophy is if you pour everything you have into two things, relationships with learners and designing their learning, that's the secret sauce of a successful school, is those two things. If you pour into those two things, you know, you'll see success. And so, you know, working with others, I'm also toying around with a new book, specifically, geared towards instructional leaders. I've had two questions sitting on my desk for years now. And, basically, just to keep myself accountable. And basically it says, ask yourself before you leave today, these two questions. Number one, what did I do today to promote learning and learners? And two, what did I do today to support staff? And in my mind, no matter what level of leadership you are in a school, in a district, superintendent, whatever, those are your two jobs. If you can have an answer to those two questions every day, you've done your job. If you can't, well, then we have to sit back and say, okay, what got in the way? Because right. these are the priority.
So good. Have you posted pictures to that effect with those questions on them? Like, I feel like I can see a slip of paper or something.
Yeah. It was just, I had a little saying on that sat on the front of my desk. It's a good day to have a good day. But on the back of it that faced me and my wife couldn't stand it because she says, oh, it's just so, it's not clean. It's not pretty. I'm like, it's not meant to be pretty. It's meant to just be there as a reminder for me to say, you know what, this is what I should have got done today. And if I did, awesome. If I didn't, then what got in the way? And how can I be intentional tomorrow to make sure that I get these two questions answered? And yeah, I've had other principals, send me posts and say, hey, I've put these on my desk. They're going to be my goals for the year. So,
awesome. Hey, a quick question, Jason. I'm thinking of my friend Dan Krynas, Dr. Dan Krynas in Connecticut, another education podcaster, and he's done a lot of work in this area, but would you say that every building leader should also be an instructional leader? I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
And that's what kind of the book I'm kind of drafting right now is about is, we're in the learning business. Hmm. The reason the building is there, the reason the lights are on, the power, the furniture, our salaries, everything is paid for to have learning to happen. And so if we're in the learning business and I know nothing about learning as a building leader, then we got a problem, because I can't lead anything. I can manage a building. I can discipline, students. But if I really want to make an impact as a leader in the building, I've got to lead the learning too, because that's the priority in the building is learning. And so, that's kind of what this next book is going to be about is, how can I be more of an instructional leader? We've had inspirational leaders and transformational leaders who want to make change and inspire and you got to be a little bit of all that. But if you don't know what learning is or what learning looks like or what science says learning should look like, and we're just doing school like we always been doing. So, right. You've got to definitely know what learning is if you're going to lead it.
I so agree. I think we're past the age of having building managers, just like a supervisor who's going to put people in different places and not attend the professional learning session there because they're off in their office managing. I think those days are gone, and I hope that matches the experience of most most schools and districts out there. We've got an anonymous user. I don't know why I'm not seeing the name here, but some anonymous user on LinkedIn. Thanks for joining the conversation. Is there a way to listen to this again after we are finished? This is great. I'm glad you're enjoying this conversation with Jason Kennedy. And yes, it will appear in the next day or two on the Teachers on Fire podcast as well. So thank you for that. Shifting gears a little bit, Jason, what's another area of learning for you outside of the building? What is it that ignites your passions and brings you alive as a human being?
I'm really digging this AI stuff and it's scary. It's a little scary when you think about it. It's a little freaky, but then again, you're like, wow, just the hours this will save, not just in education, but hours it will save for you, period. Like, for example, I just use Google Bard to find some cheap flights. I just said, hey, Google Bard, I want to travel this date to this date from this airport to this airport. Find me a flight. And it did. I don't have to go and dig for things anymore. And especially, Google Bard will read my emails, will summarize what's in my Google Drive. I mean, all sorts of potential coming. And I know we're just at the very beginning of this. I mean, I feel like, AI is going to be a crazy game changer when it comes to our everyday lives, not just in education.
Absolutely. Well, perhaps on a similar theme, I'm not sure. Could you share about a phone app, a personal habit, or some kind of productivity hack that contributes to your success and keeps your fire burning?
I'll stick with AI. I'm actually sharing out. I've written some Google slides for some of my leaders in the district, just to share out, say, hey, I know you guys have a job and some of, a lot of your jobs going back to the managerial part revolve around this operational managerial kind of stuff. And here's some tools to help you out. Here's some prompts. You can ask ChatGPT or, I just showed, several people in my district some leaders in my district magic school. And so, you know, just a really quick and easy way to, you know, generate a message to families and translate it in different languages, or, you know, write a recommendation letter or anything else. And it's, and I get the apprehension of some people. They're like, well, this thing's just doing the work for you. And I'm like, it's doing it. It's assisting you. It's not doing the work. You know, you're going to make it sound like you, and you're going to make it personable and everything else, and you're going to get your message across. But in the long run, sometimes, you know, if it's 4:30 in the afternoon and you've had one of those, you know, Fridays at school, and you have to send something out, it's a little bit easier to get AI to get you jump-started than having to go, you know, after one of those days.
100%. Well, that's something I remind teachers of as well. You got to sign your name to this. You are still a professional. Whatever message you're putting out, you got to make sure that it represents your intentions accurately. We're starting to wind down here. Jason, are you ready for the rapid fire round?
Hit me. Let's go.
All right. So starting at EducationX, tell us about someone we should follow there and share why they've been inspiring you lately.
Ken Williams at Unfold the Soul. He just keeps it real. That's what I like. Is just, you know, I sometimes think I come across a little bit too harsh. Ken Williams keeps it real. He just speaks the truth.
One ed tech tool that you currently love using in your professional practice.
I just got Diffit for my entire school district to use. You know, just taking the more time we can take off of teachers doing the, you know, resource gathering kind of stuff, the better. That way we can get back into our planning, talking about how we can make learning happen.
One book, one of your all-time faves, or one that you've been reading lately?
Well, I just traded autographs with John Hattie at a state conference. Dude, still on cloud nine about it. But
amazing.
Visible Learning 2, his recent update to the first Visible Learning. You know, I reference it all the time.
Awesome. He is a legend for sure. Podcast, is there one that you are listening to in the education space?
I will listen to Cult of Pedagogy. You know, a lot of our ideas align. You know, a lot of it's about, you know, learning centered stuff instead of teaching centered stuff.
Jennifer Gonzalez, another icon. And if you're just starting out with education podcasts, she is definitely one to tune into. On the subject of podcasts and as a support to my work, who is one educator that you would recommend I interview on this podcast?
I mean, reach out to Ken Williams. He brings it and he brings it in a practical way, and it's funny and relatable, and he'd be a great one to have on.
One YouTube channel that you enjoy?
Yours, actually, Tim. You know, you give a lot of great tips. You give a lot of great information, especially now that you're, you know, doing these interviews with educators. You know, nothing I'd rather watch on a Saturday morning than just throw YouTube off the TV in the living room.
Thank you so much for that. Really appreciate it, Jason. And just for fun, what are you streaming during your downtime, whether it's Netflix, Apple, Prime, wherever you're going? When you've got no brain space for anything productive, what are you tuning into?
I am sometimes guilty of watching too much of my kind of stuff at the house. And so every once in a while, I have to relent and let my wife, you know, get involved in the streaming. So we actually watched Lessons in Chemistry on Apple, and it was pretty good.
Now, is that about romance or a chemistry lab, or
it's a lot of different things, but it is. Okay. I mean, you'd have to watch it. It's, you know, it's time period piece, you know, and about, you know, women and power struggles and whatnot, but it's also got some romance, and I'm not going to give anything away. Can't talk.
Sure. We'll talk about it. Well, as we close, Jason, what are the best ways for the viewers who are catching this replay on LinkedIn or YouTube, or the listeners on the Teachers on Fire podcast, what are the best ways for them to follow you and reach out?
Well, if you're on X, it's at Let's Quit Teaching, no G, because character limits. But you can also go to www.letsquitteaching.com. And you can also reach out. Like I said, I have teachers and leaders across, well, all over the place. Reach out on email. So letsquitteaching@gmail.com. I'll answer any questions you have. I'm happy to work with others, share whatever resources I have. You know, just just like having the conversations and assisting other educators.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Jason. I've really enjoyed this conversation. Continue to learn from you and be inspired by your work. Thank you, Teacher on Fire, for tuning in. Make sure during these difficult and challenging times, you are engaging in places like EducationX. You are sharing an encouraging message to lift up a colleague, and you're keeping your own fire for learning burning bright. And I'll see you soon in the next conversation here on the Teachers on Fire podcast. Take care, everyone. See you soon.